You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about a free resource that we're offering, an e-booklet by Todd Adkins called Developing Your Leadership Pipeline. This booklet will help you and your church leadership team begin to formulate a leadership pipeline from concept to structure to training in your own church. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, and you can download it there. Now, here's the podcast. Enjoy. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
And today we have the pleasure of being joined by our teammate, Kevin Spratt. Kevin, how are you?
Would it be appropriate if I were silent again, like the last time?
Yes, the last time Kevin joined us, we were talking about introverted leadership, and he remained silent throughout the introduction. And I don't know if it was a joke or if that was just what he was more comfortable doing.
I think this was.
We'll find out on this episode. Today we are going to be talking about leading an entrepreneurial venture, so starting something new and the differences between that and leading something that's a more established venture of any kind. So this could be church, this could be business, this could be anything. All of us have had our hands in something on both sides of the fence in some capacity or another. So I think it'll be a pretty good conversation. And I think a good way to give context to this is to describe what all of us were part of starting in some way or another almost 3 years ago now. Well, you guys were involved more than 3 years ago.
Todd's been here 4 years.
Yep.
And in my 7 years here, 4 of them have been with Todd. So
right. And I came on just shy of 3 years ago. And that was in launching Ministry Grid, so our online training tool for churches, which you've heard talked about on the podcast.
Pretty much everything we've done in the last 3-4 years has been new because right. Lifeway didn't have a leadership development area for, I don't know, the last 20 years. And so in coming in, starting up that division, that ministry area, whatever you want to call it, you know, everything we've done pretty much has been new.
Specifically to Lifeway.
Specifically
right. to Lifeway. Not that there's a podcast that's a new idea, but I mean, at the same time,
this podcast, I mean, we started that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's...
Yeah. And we're launching an event
fall,
in the fall,
which Pipeline.
You've heard about.
Registered, please do.
MyLeadershipPipeline.com.
Day 2 is sold out.
That's it right. Is. We have coaching days that are selling out quickly or have sold out. We have an early bird deadline at the end of July. So... go take advantage of that. So we're doing that where we have begun consulting services. So we're kind of constantly starting things. We are in our startup is our mode pretty much all the time. But prior to being at Lifeway, Todd was at a church in Washington, D.C. and was responsible for starting multiple new campuses for that church.
Yeah.
Kevin and I both came from different worlds. Kevin was in a different team at Lifeway, which had a long-term sort of program that he was a team leader for and helped run, but it was something that was well-established. I came from a publishing company with a well-established way of doing things, so the startup thing was a change for us. So we have sort of a variety of perspectives on this, and I think that will lend itself to a pretty good conversation. That's my hope anyway.
My natural... penchant is in any situation.
Is that the Kentucky way of pronouncing penchant?
That's really weird.
It's like the Pirates of Penzance.
I came back from vacation. So I'm...
You're full of beans?
Yeah.
All right. Raring to go.
No, my natural inclination, can I say...
Yes, you pronounced that one correctly too.
Inclination would be to, if I'm coming into something that even... is established and management oriented. I just can't do it. Like I have to break it. So very early on, I figured out that I can't do that. Like either I need to be in a turnaround or a startup or something that is going to require change based on my personality type, which I share with you, Barnabas Piper, an ENTP.
That is true. Kind of constantly trying new ways to do old things, if nothing else.
As the INTJ, you all drive me nuts.
Another reason this will be a fun podcast.
It will. Okay, let's get started.
All right, so our first question is, what are myths that people believe about leading a startup? I think entrepreneurialism is a bit of an idol in the workplace today? That's where this question came from. The idea that people would much rather work for themselves than work for the man. And yeah. So everybody wants to start something. So what are some of the myths that people believe about that, that whole idea?
Easy that, I mean, this is, we've talked about this. I think Brad and I did one, Brad Lominick and I did a podcast on millennials, I think.
We talked about sort of work styles by generation at one point.
And one of the things was that this is a younger generation coming through has seen so much what appears to be overnight success. And so I forgot the statistic.
Statistic along the lines of most successful entrepreneurs have failed like 7 to 10 times at least before succeeding?
Yes. And the number of years that it really does take for what appears to be an overnight success.
Yeah. You know, it's, every overnight success took a decade.
Exactly. You know, that's a title of a good article in Entrepreneur Forbes it's entitled The 10-Year Overnight Success. So if you we can put that in the show notes, but that's a really good, one. So I would say the first thing is people think it's easy. People think that it's going to be an overnight success.
Well, yeah. And I was going to kind of dovetail. I was thinking about my answer and also looking down through the rest of the question, see if it applied in a different place. But since you brought it up in this spot, I think that, you know, it's kind of a burst your bubble, but your idea may not be the most original, best idea out there just because you believe in it and just because it's the latest grace. And that may be what God has called you to. Don't want to take away from that. There is a lot of casting vision. It's going to be a lot of, you know, telling a lot of people the same things over and over and over again, mm-hmm. trying to get them to catch on to what you're where you're going.
Whether or not you're trying to get them to attend your church plant or raise venture capital, depending on what world you're in. I think another myth is that you don't have a boss, because even if you run the company,
you got a boss.
You have a boss. You have a budget that's your boss. You have possibly people who have a board. You have people who have invested in it. Here at Lifeway, we are entrepreneurial, but we are part of a larger organization. And Todd reports to Eric Geiger, who reports to Tom Rayner,
reports to our trustees.
Right, and so we're not free agents, and we don't get to do whatever we want. And so the idea that working for yourself gives you ultimate flexibility, you will find out very quickly. You still have to function by a pretty distinct set of rules if you want to succeed. So I think the myth of absolute flexibility and freedom is
undermined. Unless you've won the lottery and you just have this big bag of cash that some investor has given you, there's with no accountability, you're absolutely locked into anything.
You can. All that does is give you a longer lifeline, because you'll end up losing that if you don't build a structured way to succeed. And then I think probably the biggest myth is just that it's an easy thing to do.
It takes discipline, and that's not fun.
It requires building your own infrastructure. So we have the benefit of having an organization that provides a lot of our infrastructure. But that's not true for somebody who's starting something from zero and they just want to start their own business. You have to figure out your own accounting. You have to figure out your own insurance. You have to figure out your own schedule, your own marketing, all of those things. You know, who's doing your graphic design for any great idea you have. All of that stuff comes from somewhere, and it's not easy. You have to build that infrastructure.
Well, I mean, it's true. Just the way that it seems that society is moving and work is moving is toward the individual contractor. And for better or for worse, it's about outcomes. It's not about hours. So usually when you're, you know, employed or you're salaried, it's about outcomes as well. But a lot of times it's about hours. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a typical job, it's going to be hours. Most of the people listening to this podcast probably don't have a typical job. They're probably a pastor, or they may be a church leader. But hours are starting to go by the wayside. Very few jobs, even if they're hourly jobs, are judged on hours alone anymore. It's really rapidly shifting toward outcomes.
Well, let's hit our second question. So that was some bubble bursting for anybody who just wanted to go out there and start their own thing. But let's turn to the positive. And what are some of the advantages of leading in a startup situation? So starting your own thing or being part of a turnaround, something where you are taking on a new venture of any kind. What are some of the advantages in that context?
You're not saddled with the debt of whatever, whether that be financial debt, that could be debt from a reputation standpoint. It could be a debt in a number of different ways that you're taking on when you take on an existing established business. Every business is known for something. Every business usually has positive and negative connotations to it. And so I think one of the things is you're starting from scratch. And so you have a you have an opportunity to decide what you want to be and what your values are, what your vision is, and get the right people, you know, on board to get to where you need to go. You don't have, you didn't inherit a staff. You didn't inherit, you know, all these other things that, that could be negative, in an established, venture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Baggage was the big thing I was going to think through. I mean, if I look at to what we started with Ministry Grid, it was, we started with a brand new team. We built the team based off of the needs that we had as they come. I mean, I think of, you know, Todd and then I came on 2-3 months later, and then Lydia came on 2-3 months later after that. I mean, it was all very sequential, and based on where we were and what our need was in the project, we built our culture around the needs of the team and around the needs of the project we were working on. And really that's a ton of ways shaped how we've been able to start other things beyond just Ministry Grid too.
And so, so we actually, the next question down is about hiring the right kind of team member. So we'll delve into that a little bit more, but that's a really good point. I think in light of this question, that means that the advantage is you get to build your own team. You don't get to, you're not just sort of stuck working with
whoever's here.
Right. It's not just sort of like, oh, I have to work with those people regardless of their work style or what they want to do. I think another advantage is while there is all of those things that we talked about before, if you do need discipline, you are kind of saddled with a certain amount of structure that you have to abide by. There's freedom of ideas. In an entrepreneurial venture, you throw it against the wall and you see if it sticks. And if you come up with a good idea,
nobody's going to tell you that's not the way we do it here.
Right. You're free to run with it. You're also free,
fill out this form.
Free to fail with
that's
it.
Against policy 309-21B.
Right. I need a 2105 on that, please.
TPS reports and whatnot. Yeah, there are very few policies to squash you if it's a true entrepreneur. You kind of make your own policies over time. And policies are created because entrepreneurs failed at things and somebody else was uncomfortable with that.
Or an individual failed in the organization in
right.
some way or
yeah, other, in so. Some capacity.
That's so, what organizations do. If somebody makes a dumb decision, a lot
they
of times
punish everybody.
There's a policy or a new procedure or a form put into place. And that is not a fun place to be.
Yeah. So entrepreneurs get to function kind of as the crow flies. It is from my idea to execution instead of multiple layers of approval and multiple layers of forms and policies and things like that. That is very, very freeing because those things can be very cumbersome and stop productivity at times. But because Kevin brought up a really good point about the nature of the team and getting to start your own team, that actually segues perfectly to our next question. Or a question further down, which was, what kind of team members should a startup leader look to hire, and then how do those differ from the kind of employees you'd hire in a more established environment? And I'm rearranging questions on the fly, so you guys can you guys just work with me here.
I think I very specifically, everybody that listens to the podcast already knows I'm a profiler to the max, and I love to assess people in 5 minutes of conversation and figure out what they are from a Myers-Briggs and StrengthsFinder and all that kind of standpoint. So I'm a big believer in hiring the person, not the position. Meaning I'm going to find the right person and personality that fits our culture and what we need at the moment. And then when there's another need or there's another element that we need in culture, I'm gonna do that. So Kevin was the first person that I brought on because he could do anything. I mean, anything I need to get done.
Kevin, I feel a little bit on the spot right
Kevin,
now.
Kevin, have we did? I don't think we've had a chance to discuss your self assigned title
on this, which is president of the Todd Atkins Make a Wish Foundation.
That's true.
Because Kevin really can get just about anything done. So Todd makes a wish, Kevin accomplishes said wish.
It is, a background in events, publishing, live streaming, content creation, production, and he did camp for multiple years. Anybody that does camp for multiple years is borderline insane. Because perfect. The amount of work.
Perfect.
He's an IMTJ, which those are borderline psychotic sociopaths. However, and they're the most rare combination. But I brought on a couple on our team, and the reason why I did that early on is they also would rather die than not see something accomplished. They have such a hard, strong responsibility.
Stubbornness,
whatever you want to call it.
Well, it is a sense of responsibility because, I mean, it is doggedly pursuing something until it is finished, as opposed to just sort of going, well, that didn't work the way we wanted. Let's just bounce to the next thing, which is more my mentality. I'm going to be like, well, let's just try something else.
This is your ride or die crew right there. And so we had a couple of those, and I'm like, okay, one day I'm going to wake up or not wake up because all these people are going to kill me, which is when I brought on Barnabas
to the team. So you could split their wrath.
So I could split their wrath. And everybody goes, who is this? Who is this guy? And then we brought on Daniel M. So it's really a combination of, if you look at how we formed our team, and our team's not that big, but it's able to accomplish a lot. Because of how we're the makeup, and we're all passionate about, you know, the same things and pulling in the same direction. And so, you know, that's at least kind of a little case study on our team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Truett Cathy said in one of his earlier books about Chick-fil-A was that they hired on a three-step process was basically character, chemistry, competency, and that what's the character of the person. What's the chemistry with the team, and then are they competent in that order? Really, preferably.
You just let down a lot of pastors who think they came up with that.
Well, I'm sorry. Go copy one of Rick Warren's sermons too. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. By the way, but yeah, I think
Rick
that
Warren? Maybe
Andy Stanley. Pick your favorite person. Okay.
John Piper. Anyway, but you know it really does go back to. I don't think that I would have taken the job with Todd kind of going back 4 years if it wasn't something I didn't believe in. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the easy one to scratch off the list, find somebody that really believes and is bought into that vision of what you're wanting to do, what you're wanting to accomplish. Then, you know, we talk about leadership development around here a ton and as we should, but the big piece in that is just realizing that you can develop anybody into anything, especially if it's a skill set like editorial work or, you know, negotiating a contract.
It's like the Jim Collins metaphor of getting the right people on the bus and then finding their seat. I mean, and that's sort of a development piece is finding their place.
What Kevin was talking about, though, is passion and attitude.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you can teach anybody a skill.
Right. And you've got to like the people that you work with. And so you've got to, if you're the truest version of an entrepreneur, and I'm thinking about five different people that I've come across in the last few years, they were individuals trying to build a company or create a product or do something specific, creating their own brand. And the only people that they brought on were the people that they liked. I mean, and that's a huge, huge piece of it, that if I don't like the person that I'm working with or can't work with them for extended periods of time or even have healthy conflict, I mean, that's one thing that that I know personally I've been dealing with. Which our team is really good with. And I think
lots of airing of grievances.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge quality is that
it's being like Festivus every day.
Festivus for the rest of us.
We have feats of strength, the airing of grievances.
I mean, really, feasting. Really being able to have healthy conflict, to be able to come to a room, come to a meeting, mm-hmm. be able to discuss opinions and decisions openly. But then be able to walk away from the open the door, walk out of the meeting, and then know that, hey, that was over. That wasn't anything personal to anybody. We're just really passionate about the work we're trying to do.
And I think especially in a small team and a startup mentality, that what Kevin was just talking about is so important because you depend on each other so much more, and people are doing multiple things. I think in a more established environment and in a larger context, your ability to really like the people you work with probably is a little lower on the priority list. Still important. Nobody likes to work with people that are annoying or they can't stand. But it's less important because people have more defined roles.
I will say, if you do work with people you don't like, we also did a podcast about that way back when.
We also did one on working for a boss you don't like how not to undermine your boss. I mean, there's all sorts of passive-aggressive podcasts. But I think in those established environments, competence and character might come a little bit more, rank a little bit higher than chemistry. That's at least that's how people tend to hire. But in a startup, I think chemistry and character are kind of part and parcel, because right. you have to be able to spend incredibly long hours working on incredibly challenging things in possibly with very little light at the end of the tunnel sometimes. And you can only do that with people you trust and like.
Right.
Which I think going back into our questions, that's a good time for question 4, which is, what are the unique challenges or pitfalls one encounters when leading a startup situation?
The first one that comes to mind for me is just limited resources. Just if there's 3 people working on starting something, the budgets are small. Usually the skill sets are limited. You're limited by who in the room can do what. And so if you don't have a web developer, well, there's a problem to solve. If you don't have a graphic designer, there's a problem to solve. If you don't have money to hire those people, now you have 2 problems to solve, because you need the person and you need the resources. And I think that's just a basic one.
Yeah, resources is, I think, a big one, a huge one, especially if I look at what we started at here at Lifeway with Ministry Grid. I look at Ministry Grid and the resources we had, and a lot of people would go, well, Lifeway's a huge organization, I think $500 million annual organization, and that is true, but, you know, we did have a lot of financial investment, but going to Barnabas's point, we still lacked a ton of people with skill set. We lack the human capital. We still are just a small team of about 4 or 5 people helping running this huge behemoth Ministry Grid and the content and everything that goes along with that. And so there will always be some level of limited resources. You may have all the investors in the world, but nobody with the skill sets to do what you need to do on a daily basis.
I would say, though, too, just to do a quick counterpoint on that, is that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. If you have an unlimited budget, you usually have very limited creativity. Mm-hmm. And so there are things that we stumbled upon, and an entrepreneur will stumble upon because they don't have the resources, and they may do something a different way that ultimately ends up turning into a business.
Right. When we podcasted with Bobby Gruenwald from was it Life Church?
And yeah, he's Life Church and YouVersion.
Yeah, so he helped. He was sort of the architect of YouVersion and that Bible app. He talked about that specifically, is that they have to intentionally remove resources and say, okay, we're not going to use all of the things that we have access to, because they're, you know, huge church, tens of thousands of people. The budget is significant. They have the budget capacity to do all sorts of things. They have to limit themselves so that they can genuinely be creative, because otherwise they just, it's sort of, you can get fat and happy and kind of lose your edge. And so that was a really interesting conversation. If y'all want to go back and hear some really interesting thoughts on entrepreneurialism in the context of a large organization, His insights were really good. I think another challenge is, and Kevin brought this up earlier, is differentiating yourself, finding the market. How do you set yourself apart? Yeah, I think the way you put it, Kevin, was that just because you think it's a great idea doesn't mean that it's going to pop. And so, you know, and we discovered that challenge with Ministry Grid, this digital training solution that, of course, we hoped every church in the world would want, and then realized we have to find the right way to present it. We have to find the right people to present it to. It's not something that just people are going to inherently go, oh, yes, we need that, and here's all of our money. And so that that's true with everything. You know, there's very few products that you put out there that just tens and hundreds of thousands of people go, oh my goodness, I'm going to throw cash at you for that thing. You have to find your niche and figure out how to present it and tell that story and market it well. And that's not an easy thing to do because you only know what you know. You don't know how other people are perceiving you and what the market realities are and those kinds of things.
Just coming at everyone every day.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, you're fighting hard. The noise.
And the interesting thing, even on that point for us, is we even tried to even go beyond just thinking inside of our own heads. I mean, it wasn't just Todd and I, you know, walking down the street or sitting in our offices going, what would be a great idea for Ministry Grid? I mean, there were hundreds of pastors that we brought in or had demos with online. Crazy. I go back to my emails and look at just the lists of people that we walked through just the concept, and then as it evolved, another 200 people that we walked through the concept and idea with, and even then, what was interesting is that what they said they wanted was not what they end up like when wanting. We did put it out to mass market, we got back a ton of different responses, even than the 300 or 400 or 500. I mean, we got to critical mass on opinions and ideas and buy in. For sure got to critical mass. There's only so much input that you could get without hearing the same thing over and over again. But then once we did put it out there and people were actually using it and using it on their own and we weren't able to coach them, Ministry Grid, from the day that it launched to even to what it is today, is dynamically different.
Yeah, multiple iterations.
I wouldn't say 180 degrees different. I would say that it's over time continued to evolve and understand that your idea is going to look way different from the beginning.
And therein lies one of the pitfalls that I would say that we fell into, which was we wanted to launch, we probably being me more than anybody else, wanted to launch Ministry Grid with everything that anybody would ever want and ever want to
every good idea we'd ever come up with.
Every good idea. I mean, we still didn't get there on some of the things that we wanted to do with it. But what we ended up finding out was, hey, get to your minimum viable product or your minimum viable...
minimum core product, like core the one product, thing you want to provide.
The one thing that you want to do, and then go from there, because you're not going to, no matter how many case studies you do, no matter how many panels of people you bring in, because as Kevin mentioned, we did hundreds.
Yeah.
You really aren't going to know what people are going to do with it until you put it out there. And I would say the same thing for, you know, if you're starting a campus or if you're starting a church or whatever it is, you know, more and more churches are meeting the community where they are versus trying to, you know, have a location and say, come to me. And that's the way I think that's very wise in what you're doing. But what I'm saying is when you start a new campus, don't just assume you need the same ministries that you have at your current church. Right. That's the ministries that you need there. No, just start it with as few, you know, staff and resources and let the calendar fill up from there. Let the ministries develop from there. They'll be much more vibrant if they come organically.
Well, and for me, that's our fifth question. That's the most important lesson that I feel like we've learned through our entire entrepreneurial. Like you need to have that idea and the vision of what that idea is and do everything in the world to clear out the clutter to protect it. You know, if it's starting a new church in a community, you can do all the surveys that you want around that community to understand the demographics and who might be coming. But until you open up the church on that first day, you're not going to know who exactly is going to come in, right? I mean, you're going to you're going that is going to ebb and flow as you move forward. So, you know, start that church plant with just the basics, child care, and Todd could correct me on this, child care, worship, lyrical worship, and preaching on a Sunday in small groups are really just the basics, and then let the church calendar fill from there. If it's training like Ministry Grid, man, video was the biggest thing that we wanted to push, and then all the functionality from there could evolve from there. I mean, there's 101 ways to wrap that.
Yeah, I mean, so we moved from being video-based training to video-enhanced training.
Right.
And there's a difference because, you know, at first it was all about the video, and now video is a piece of what,
right,
you know, a piece of the types of learning, yeah, that we do.
So Todd, so Kevin posed the question, what's the one lesson that stands out to you that you've learned in your startup efforts? And he, you know, he mentioned his answer. What would you say the one thing that stands out, the one lesson you would like to pass along?
Well, I have, since we talked to Simon Sinek several weeks ago, I've not stopped thinking about infinite games. If you didn't listen to that podcast, listen to that one.
Yes, but please do. His insights were phenomenal.
It was about the world is currently playing finite games where the object is to win.
And there's a single winner and everybody else is a loser.
One winner, everybody else is a loser. You know, that's why Walmart is losing to Amazon, because Amazon's playing a different game. They're playing an infinite game. They're not playing to win. They're playing to get better.
Yeah.
And we as believers in Christ, and we as ministers of the gospel who are serving the body of Christ, we're playing an infinite game. If anybody's playing an infinite game, yeah, it's us. The quite, whole Christian quite, life is quite an literally, game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it's, hey, I mean, you know, when push comes to shove, you have, you know, a top line and bottom line on revenue and all these things that come with it, especially from a business sense. But never forget that, I always said, if you're a leader and you're not a learner, you have a short shelf life. And so for me, just reapplying, always being a learner, mm-hmm, what it's really saying is it's an infinite game, and I need to constantly focus on getting better and better and better and better and better at whatever it is I do.
Yeah.
And so I would say that the same thing with whatever you're entering, start small. Most big things start small at some point. Start small and then just focus on getting better and better and better and continuing to learn.
Yeah.
So you know how to do that.
And I would say the one thing that stands out to me, it's sort of a two-pronged thing. The first one is leverage all of your successes. So if you have success in one little area, which especially when you're starting up is really momentous because success is hard to come by, you leverage that and you do it by that second prong, which is by telling really good stories. So you have to tell people the story of why you are doing what you're doing. Having a good idea does not matter if nobody understands your good idea. Having a good idea doesn't matter if you can't execute and explain and tell the story of how this will impact their life or their business or their efforts or their soul or something. And so it's leveraging your successes with the right kind of stories so that people begin to see, oh, that's how what they're doing matters. That's why it matters. And that's also a Simon Sinek special, the idea that people buy why you do, not why you do things, not just what you do. And so I'd say for us, in Ministry Grid and in past ventures, the stories that we tell about how this will impact and then how we execute to back those stories up are the one thing that I would stick by, because your good idea may be awesome, but you need to communicate it properly so that people buy in and get it.
Good deal.
All right. Well, that was this episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We mentioned at the top the leadership conference that we have coming up, Pipeline. It's in October. There is still room to register, although the room for the coaching days is going very quickly. So move on that.
We sold out the second day.
So that would be October 14th. We opened up another coaching day on October 12th. And that is moving quickly. So the 12th, 13th, 14th of October in Nashville, go to myleadershippipeline.com. Our early bird registration deadline is the end of July. So that is a significant discount. I mean, it's up to $40 per person off, depending on if you're going individual rate or group rate. We really welcome groups and church staffs and the like. So myleadershippipeline.com, check that out. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, we wanted to remind you about the free e-booklet, Developing Your Leadership Pipeline, that will help your church get started training leaders more effectively. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, where you can download the e-booklet for free.